I'm gonna. This whole delay is probably gonna get me like one pitch, and it's a Ryan Rua pitch. So like, I don't care.
Hey, he hit one off the facade in the upper deck.
That is true. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's very impressive. Even when they're not fair balls. Hello and welcome to Rangers Rundown, your 2018 podcast home for all things related to the best team playing in a metro area that begins with the letter D. Yes, that's right. I'm calling out the Detroit Tigers, a team that won on a walk-off bunt. Nope, we're here for the Texas Rangers. I'm Max, and I'm joined today by Hayden.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about baseball and baseball-adjacent activities. So as we speak, the Rangers are currently pummeling Boston and David Price. That's always fun to see. Right-handed Jurickson Profar going to town. Been a big fan of righty Jurickson Profar the last couple weeks. I don't know what all has gone into the mechanics. I know the swing looks different. He's got a bit of a leg kick. I like that. He's been aggressive. He's been not just aggressive, but he's also willing to like take pitches. He's been good. He's swinging at things that are in the zone for him. It's been really good. This is the Jurickson that we all kind of hoped to see for the last couple of years.
Yeah, his OPS right now as a right-handed hitter is almost 1,300. Extremely small sample size alert.
Yeah, it's
only 21, but I mean, he's earning himself. I mean, I guess right now he's playing every day regardless, but he's earning himself ways out of any kind of platoons. So that's pretty cool. It'd be cool if Profar eventually panned out because we're still riding that train.
Absolutely. I know that for a long time he was considered to be better from the left-hand side, and there were some people that were even calling for him, and by people I mean fans, let's be honest here, to drop his right-handed hitting entirely just a couple years ago. So it's really encouraging that come up. Hopefully he can kind of get in the swing of things from the left side and get where I think folks want to see him being. His defense at shortstop has still not been stellar. He definitely had some issues approaching the bag. I think it's been the biggest problem. He has just weird throws when he's having to make decisions paying attention to runners. Some of that's been a little bit better since he had his little injury. I wonder if he had some nice and focused coaching on that, and he's taken better angles. Arm actions still aren't great at short. I know there's going to be a lot of discussion that we'll probably have on this pod later on. Not this episode, but at some point over the season, about if he fits at third base long time with the Rangers and how that arm is going to play coming across the diamond. I know that the throwing angles are a little different, and so he might end up moving next door to third base. But for now, starting shortstop, and depending on the course of the season, we may see him move over and play some third in a little bit because Elvis is going to come back in June. Beltre is supposed to be back well before then, but we'll see what they do with him over the course of the season, you know, taking care of his legs, and hopefully he can avoid any other minor injuries and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and then of course he's probably going to be not with the team anymore on August 1st, so that should be at least 2 months of third base auditioning, potentially, especially if Elvis is playing every day like we expect him to, then I bet you that's where we see Profar, probably just the last 2 months straight up.
I think it's one of the grossest things about this season is that it's hard for me to root for the team to lose when I'm actually watching the games. You know, if I'm on my phone and I'm seeing the At-Bat app and the Rangers are down by 30, I'm like, yeah, rack it up. I don't care. It's a lost season. But when I watch the game, I'm cheering the good plays. I want to see my kids do well. I want to see all this. And so I don't want to trade Adrian Beltre. I love Adrian Beltre. He's incredibly fun to watch. I love his antics. I love his play at third. I love his play at the plate. But if we're not able to trade Adrian Beltre, that almost certainly does not mean we're a contending team come August. Let's take a look at this roster. Let's be honest. That means that either he wasn't good enough to trade or that we've decided to hold on to him and not get any value out of him. And that either means that the trade market wasn't there, which would be pretty disappointing, or it means that we just didn't do it. And really rough to be rooting for Adrian Beltre to be good enough that you're trading him in July, knowing that no matter how good, you know, this guy is, a transcendent Hall of Fame player, your team still sucks and needs to trade him. I don't like it. Haven't been here in a couple years.
Yeah, it's we got kind of a trial run with Darvish last year.
That's true, and it sucked. Yeah, broke my wife's heart.
Yeah, same. But
it broke. Wait, it broke your wife, my wife?
No, heart? It broke my heart as well. Yeah.
That's the only jersey my wife has ever owned for a baseball player. I bought her a Yu Darvish jersey. Yeah. Well, one of her first baseball loves. She loves Yu Darvish. She loves Jerickson Profar and Adrian Beltre. And then we adopted Joey Gallo a couple years ago.
Good call. Yeah. Good call. So third base is a position that is kind of uncertain and kind of has an air of mystery and intrigue around it, not only because of Beltre's future with the team and when that may or may not change, either due to injury or trade or whatever, is also because we have a third base. He's not a prospect anymore, but Joey Gallo.
Third base non-prospect.
Yeah, I mean,
some organizational guy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's just a depth piece.
Joe Callow.
He hasn't been playing third base in Beltre's absence, and I think that it's worth talking about, because to me, I can understand looking at Gallo, and he played in like 50-something games last year at third base, I believe, and missed some plays, and you kind of notice the deficiencies more, I think, when you're used to watching Beltre play third. But he looked okay. Mm-hmm. He made some athletic plays. Definitely has the arm for it. And I would consider, well, since he was drafted and has played third base basically his entire life, that's probably something that he's good at. The organization has invested in him as a third baseman. It seems odd to me that we would just, once your starting third baseman goes down, that you would immediately move Joey Gallo to left field in order to play Kiner Falefa and Renato Nunez, both utility guys, at third base. And I don't really follow if it was like a one game thing, or if it was like the playoffs and you really wanted to get somebody's bat in the lineup, like when we put Mike Napoli in left field, I'd understand it. But why?
It definitely,
I thought Joey Gallo was a third baseman.
And I think that's something that we have to kind of come to grips with as fans, in that I definitely didn't think that the defense was so bad last year and was pretty willing to see Joey Gallo play third. And when we started the season, they said, Joey Gallo is our first baseman. We don't want to yank him around this year. We're going to leave him at first as much as we can. We're not going to make him a multi-positional guy. He's not a utility player. We want him to get in the swing of hitting. And that's fine. Gallo kind of did that last year. He played mostly first base for the second half of the season. He played, I think, about 66, 70 games at third early on with Beltre's injury, and then transitioned to first base. And his second half, like we discussed last week, was really, really good. And so maybe they wanted to focus on what he was doing there, just really focus on getting his at-bats in. He's a good first baseman. He's a useful player to have over there, his size and his athleticism. You know, it's a bit of a waste almost of that big arm and of that premium athleticism for a guy who's 6'5", but it's fine. And then, you know, we lost Delino, and we lost Rugnet, and we lost Elvis, and then we lost Adrian Beltre. We have weird players playing in weird positions. And seeing Joey Gallo move off of first base, and then, like you said, play left field and not third base, was just sort of surprising. Yeah, this obviously is one of the front offices that you and I were not seeing last year in evaluating his third base defense. Maybe he looked really rough there in spring training and in instructional stuff with the coaches. Maybe they're had enough in front of them over the last couple of years of his play in the minors to say, yep, that's just not going to work for us long term. Let's not play around with it. But I guess I'm not satisfied that he isn't a third baseman. And so it was surprising to see them do that. And, you know, we're watching a game today where Renato Nunez is playing third base. And Renato Nunez is also not an especially talented third baseman. He's probably very similar to Gallo in terms of his overall third base profile. So we're giving that guy a shot to see if he can stick. And we're saying, Joey, you're going to be our left fielder now, because we need to get Ronald Guzman in the lineup, which, okay, I don't mind getting Ronald Guzman in the lineup. There's nowhere else for him to play in a team that has six corner outfielders and a DH. Mm-hmm. So where do we go from here, you know?
Right, and you kind of hit on two other things that I am just I'm confused by, and I could be kind of talked off the ledge, so to speak. I don't know. I feel irrationally worked up about it, but I don't know. Maybe it's because I want to find
out about it. That's the Rangers Rundown subtitle.
Yeah, we're yeah, but I would be fine if the organization said, yeah, Gallo not going to be a long-term third baseman. I would be okay with that. I'd be disappointed just because finding a third baseman is harder to find than a left fielder or a first baseman, you know. And he's worked so hard to be a third baseman, and you would it's just convenient to have him just take over Beltre's position, right?
And it reduces his unicorn status a little bit. There are something really, really fun about thinking that we're going to have a 6'5", 260-pound third baseman with 80-grade raw power. You know, you don't see a lot of 6.5-foot-tall third basemen. Like Troy Glaus and I mean, other dudes, Matt near that big. Sano's pretty big.
Sano's massive, yeah.
And at least he's getting to play right field, which is the sexier of the outfield positions. Although I will, in the front office's defense, left field of the ballpark is harder to play than right field. The sun is apparently pretty hard out there, and the power alley is deeper on the left side. So there's more ground to cover, and Gallo is definitely faster than Mazzara. So it does make sense if we're going to deploy them to put Mazzara in right and Gallo. They're both got big arms, so... Gallo had that great play the other day, too. You know, it's not like he's a bad left fielder. I don't mind seeing it. I'm just like, but I wanted my unicorn to be a third baseman. It would just be more magical.
Well, his utility is lessened in left field. Mm-hmm. That would probably go on any team. That certainly goes on this team, like you said, has 16 left fielders on the roster.
He's taking their plate appearances from Ryan Rua. Right. How dare he?
If you want to talk about whose plate appearance he's taking, well, I guess he's not directly taking away plate appearances. That would probably more be a Ronald Guzman or Renato Nunez situation. But
yeah, it feels like Guzman.
So,
really.
Kind of mesh the topics a little bit.
Transitions.
So today is May 3rd. May the 3rd. May Willie be with you on May 3rd. Something like that. It's what everybody's saying. So today... congratulations to everyone. We made it to where we will now earn the 7th year of a Willie Calhoun, no matter what. Yay. Which is awesome. So, yeah, we'll see him in like 2025. Oh my gosh. That's a long time. Or 24. I don't know how numbers work.
Through 24, I think, now.
Yeah. Point is that we did a great job in resisting on bringing Willie Calhoun up, but the only thing is, John Daniels, turn the volume up here because you didn't catch us before. We did it. We made it. Today's an important day because there's a thing that's called like a service time clock, and there's this whole business about like days of service and like what counts as like a full year and all this stuff. So we get to have more Willie in our lives for cheaper. That's basically it. So good job, John. I know that you just accidentally walked backwards into this benefit. You had no idea that May 3rd was even the day. I can't.
He kind of has to say that. It just sort of, it stands out when you read it as a fan. You're like, okay, so did you not know that, really? Come on, man. Like, you're not dumb, but... He can't say, well, yeah, we have it carefully calculated. We knew exactly when that day was. It's just sort of gross. I think that Willie Calhoun should be on this team. I don't think there's really any argument that he's not one of the 9 best hitters that the organization can field, and we have a way to field him. My optimal lineup would be to leave Guzman at first base, to move Gallo to third base, let Calhoun play in left, and then you try and work Renato Nunez into the lineup when you can as a right-handed bench bat. Does Nunez have the potential to be better than a right-handed bench bat? Yes, he does. There are the tools there. You know, we talked about it when he came up, or when he came over from Oakland. I don't know, there were articles written about it. You know, he's got the classic Jose Bautista, Nelson Cruz pop-up profile of a big-hitting, questionable, fringe athlete who's in his later 20s and just hasn't really been given a chance to play in the bigs due to roster situations and option years and stuff like that, but I don't really, it doesn't hurt me a ton to say that Ronaldinho can, we can give him fewer at-bats to try and get guys like Guzman and Calhoun and Gallo into lineup every day. Right. But, okay, Joey Gallo is not a third baseman. Okay, that's fine. Switch him back over to first. Call up Calhoun. Tell Guzman, give him a big slap on the butt. Say, you did good stuff up here. We're going to send you on down. You're a big leaguer. You're going to be back with this team as soon as we can make everything work. There you go.
Right, and I don't think that there's any chance, like, even if you take Calhoun out of the picture, I don't think that there's any chance that Guzman is up the rest of the year. He hasn't been killing it, and he's somewhat expendable. I mean, he's only up here because of the numerous injuries. Mm-hmm. I've been excited and pleased at the good things that he has given us so far, but he's not ready to be
in the game.
Yeah, he's not ready to be a major league regular anyways.
No.
But Willie Calhoun is. Now, I'm not, you know, you'll have some front office defenders, which I generally side with, JD and you know, his ilk. But I'm like, come on now. Like, come on.
Yeah, it puts us in an interesting position as fans, I think, where I too have generally been pretty willing to just go along with everything that JD says. This has been a very good front office, I think, for most of its run. You know, you can point to things the last couple of years and say, oh, they should have known this, but we haven't played out this thread. It's hard to judge what happened even in 2017 because we don't really know what the farm situation looks like when these guys actually make it to the bigs. And yeah, you have to take everything in context. It takes a couple of years to really understand what's going on a couple of years ago. I think the 2014 hell year screwed things up and moved windows around a little bit. And so we made some big trades to land guys like Luke Roy and Hamels. And you can say that those were wins because we got to the playoffs. And you can say that those were losses because you gave up a lot of talent to not win the series and to not really win in the playoffs either. You can say what you will. I've generally been a big fan of the front office, but I'm seeing things now that I go, well, I don't like these decisions. And is it because I know a lot less about baseball than I think I do? Probably. Let's be honest. I probably know way the hell less about the sport than I think I do.
Yeah, no, I'll be there with you.
I think I do. It's just, you know, one of the nice things about being a Rangers fan for the last couple of years has been that doesn't happen super often. I watch things and I'm like, yeah, I think my team's going to do the smart thing. And there they go. They did the smart thing that I thought was the smart thing. I feel smart. I feel good about my team. It's nice. We're starting to see a couple times where I'm sort of disagreeing with some of the things that the front office are saying. And that's just going to happen. That's just part of the game. So we'll see how bad it looks going forward. Speaking of how, at the end of the set, speaking of how bad it looks, Shinsuke just got wrecked trying to go first to third.
I know. I'm watching that. Oh my gosh.
He almost got killed by that ball bouncing to the middle. I don't know why they decided to run on Mookie.
He wasn't even running full speed.
Oh, gosh.
Gosh, come
on,
Chu.
He has.
That ball was like on the infield dirt, and he was pedaling around second base and thought, I'm going to make it another 90 feet.
So dumb.
Anyways,
But I think Willie Calhoun is going to be with his team soon. If the May 3rd cutoff date truly, really didn't matter, and this has nothing to do with his service time, we're waiting on the bat to come around. We're waiting on the glove to keep getting better in left field. I haven't seen a lot of really, really specific fielding reports on him in Round Rock.
Yeah, me either.
I've caught a couple of games. I've seen some questionable stuff, and I've seen some routine plays that he made. So it's hard to say that I don't have the information in front of me to say that he's gotten better or that he's stayed the same or somehow gotten worse at left field. The bat has definitely not been there so far this season. Cold start. He's striking out more than he ever has before. But I'm not super worried about the bat. His reports are so good as a hitter that I think the more
trouble
you can't
overreact. Yeah,
right. I think you can't look at a couple of weeks of games and go, well, yeah, he's toast. I think the troubling thing is some of the reports about his attitude. I think it was Tepit had a tweet saying that scouts are killing him on his approach to the game right now. And honestly, I can't be that surprised. I can't be offended. He did everything he needed to do to earn a place on a big league team. He just isn't a very good defender on a team that shouldn't have to care about it, but fields like 17 DHs and squeezes them into corner outfield positions. you know, if this team doesn't have Shin-Soo Choo, he has a place to play. Or if Shin-Soo Choo could still kind of fake it in the outfield. You know, if we could just stick Choo in left field and Willie DH, that would be great.
Right.
But Choo won't play the outfield. He just can't anymore.
Right.
And that's unfortunate.
Yeah. I think I did see that thing about his makeup right now, too. And my reaction to that, and if, when I was younger, I would have more of a negative reaction. I would say, well, like, you know, something kind of, I don't know, very fan oriented, and say, well, like, oh, you're lucky to play a game. You just need to make sure that you do your job.
You need to focus on the team. You're lucky.
Focus on
the
team. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
knuckle down.
My perspective of it has kind of changed a little bit when you consider, kind of, I guess, put it into the real world. You know, consider that there's a promotion up for your job, and you've done everything that you're asked to do. This job is going to have you make more money in a day than you make like in 2 weeks. It's going to have you playing, or your audience, you're going to be giving your presentations or whatever to like, what, five times as many people a night. You're going to get to stay in, you're going to get to fly on planes instead of riding buses to places. Mm-hmm. Your pregame and postgame spread in the clubhouse is going to be sick instead of peanut butter and jellies.
All like, Chipotle, all the time.
Right, right.
I remember them Joey Gallo interviews.
Right, yeah, no, he has that card. I'm really jealous. You're like, okay, well, hopefully someday I'll get this promotion, right? But then they go ahead and just play like a Carlos Tochi and Drew Robinson and Renato Nunez. Like, no offense, but you got those guys are not prospects. Mm-hmm. They haven't, you know, I guess maybe quote unquote earned it, sort of. And it just seems obvious to me that his service time is being manipulated, which it's the club's right to do it. It's in the CBA. I'm fine with it. And as a Rangers fan, and a selfish Rangers fan, I'm glad that they did that. But it's time to bring him up. It's time to like show your employees that, you know, it's time to be in the big leagues. And I think that with that, that attitude changes. And obviously, we're going off of like one tweet anyways. But
yeah,
I'm just saying,
I'm not really
it's
worried about
it's believable to be upset.
Forward. Yeah. I think that he has every right to be upset, and I would be too. I think it's something that fans can definitely lose track of a lot, is that this is their job. This is their life. This is what they, you know, and to compare it, this is what they went to school for. This is what they worked for. This is what they studied for. They put in all those hours. They just did it differently. You know, where I was hitting the books. Okay, that's not true. I never studied for anything. That's why I host a podcast. Now, where I was doing those things in school, they were doing them in the weight room and on the field and in the film room. And, you know, it's got to suck to be told, you got to work on something new. It's not like we're surprised that he can't play defense. The Dodgers knew that. We knew that. Everyone knew that. And everyone who'd ever read baseball prospectus knew Willie Calhoun can't play defense. Not really a thing he does. He can kind of fake it at second base. But yeah. Were we surprised when he couldn't transition into being a major league above average or even average left fielder? I don't know. We're going to see him soon. I think he's going to start hitting big dongs in the ballpark, and that's going to make everything feel a lot better. But for right now, it's kind of uncomfortable, and I hope he can just move past it pretty quick and right. Start seeing the future of the Rangers, because this is a guy we're counting on to be a mainstay part of this team. We're really looking for dudes like Gallo and Guzman and Mazzara and Calhoun to be the core of an offensive unit that is making this Rangers team relevant in 2020 and 2021. And mm-hmm. I'd like to get that ball rolling now.
Right.
Does a couple weeks matter? Do 2 weeks in April or May now matter in 2021? Probably not. Yeah. But let's see it. Let's see that future. Let's get these guys used to playing together. Let's get these lineups rolling. Let's look like a real baseball team again. I want to see it soon.
Yeah. My date is May 17th. As far as I will start to believe that he has not been kept down this long, I will believe John Daniels saying that he's down because of his defense. If we make it past May 17th and he's still not up. Yeah, because you can't do it today. Like, that's just dumb. That's a dead giveaway. And especially after John Daniels got so, like, the quote angry that he has is not nice. Like, he got angry. He's usually very even keeled. Like, yeah. John, are you going to make any trades? Attacked. Yeah, I do too. Yeah, some idiot. Like, he dropped the I word. Wrote a blog. Like, first off, I want to know what he's reading because I would like to join that blog.
You are supposed to use I words. That's just not the one they meant. It's I sentences. That's not. It's they're different. But it's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. No, it's John's totally fine.
Do John's thing.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. But he got kind of defensive. At least that's the way that the article read. That's the way the quote read. And so you can't bring him up today. You can't bring him up this weekend. But I think that he'll be up by mid-May, and we'll go, okay, cool. Well, let's roll.
Let's roll indeed. So I know we are rolling right now against the Red Sox, but first I want to talk real briefly about the Indian series. That was kind of a weird one. I feel like when we play the Indians, we often get weird stuff. It was a pity that Elvis was injured for this one.
He loved
playing in Cleveland over his career. He's a phenomenally good hitter up there. And we definitely could have used him in some of these games. So you want to talk about the good one first or the bad one first? Let's talk about Doug Fister.
Yeah.
Because that Doug Fister doing Doug Fister things, comes off the DL. This is coincidentally the good game, but I'm going to talk about Doug Fister first. 6 2/3 innings against a lineup that was not very good coming in, but has some very good players in it, and we fixed a few of them. I know, I think I said this in the pod last week, that we were going to make Jason Kipnis look good again, and we did. Congratulations, we're here to serve. Us.
Yeah.
We added like 30 points to his batting average and probably tripled his slugging percentage. Like, man, Jason Kipnis looked like actual Jason Kipnis again. But this is a team that has, you know, Francisco Lindor is very good. Jose Ramirez is a good hitter. Mike Brantley is hitting really, really well this year. Edwin Encarnacion came into the series super cold since basically opening day, but Edwin likes to screw with Rangers fans, so he hit like 7 home runs in that series. And they've got good players on this team.
Right.
And Fister went out there against Mike Clevenger, who has been a very good pitcher of late, and out-dueled him. You know, gave up 2 runs, or unearned. They were his fault. I mean, it was his error. But
right.
It was a good start. And it was a very encouraging, very Fistery kind of performance. You know, we're hoping to see a guy out there and soak up some innings and be effective. You know, he's not going to be a huge strikeout pitcher. He's not going to be, you know, an ace type who's just Scherzering people, but you want to see him be steady and effective and good. And against a lineup that was on paper not super great, had some good players, but they weren't hitting well, Doug Fister went out and did the thing you wanted him to do. And that was nice. It was good.
Yeah, and he's been a nice little surprise. I think we're only paying him like $3 million this year, and I think there's an option for next season too.
He might be paying us. It's a really good contract.
Really good deal. Just give us a chance to win most nights, and honestly, that's probably more than we can say about some of the other guys that we have taking the ball for us.
Yeah, I was doing a little run through Fister's Fangraphs page earlier, just seeing if, you know, we were getting tricked on anything, if there's anything really cool to look at, and most of his numbers are within ranges. You know, his ERA is really good. It's below 3 right now. He's not a sub-3 ERA pitcher. I don't think that's the case for Doug Fister anymore. Last year, it was fully exactly 2 runs higher at 4.88. But his FIP and his XFIP are just over 4. I think that he's more that kind of pitcher, a high 3s, around 4 ERA kind of guy. And I know like a 4 ERA doesn't sound very sexy, but if you get enough innings out of that, that's a very useful pitcher. And I think he's a little bit better than a 4 ERA, but he's been good. Nothing really jumps out as being super unusual in his batted ball profiles, his strikeout weight and walk rate. He's going to be over 3 walks per 9 now, I think, and that's where he's at. It's a little high. That might come down. His strikeouts are fine. He's giving up some sort of unusual contact. His fly balls are down, and his line drives are up, which is a little weird. hard hit rate's a little bit up, but nothing that really jumps out with enormous red flags, which you cannot say about, like you were saying earlier, other members of this pitching staff. So I think the Doug Fister we're getting is pretty close to the Doug Fister we're gonna get. I think he's gonna be an effective pitcher. He's been an effective pitcher, and the peripherals say he's not good, you know, not great, but effective. And great, it's 2018. The Rangers need pitchers. So
yeah,
sign me up.
Yeah. And so why would you say that we need some pitchers? Why would you frame it that way?
They all keep either exploding or just being bad. So we had, in the game that Doug Fister started, Kella had his first really, really terrible outing. Gave up a two-strike, two-out grand slam to Michael
Nothing
Brantley.
Like it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one that we all did in our backyards when we were kids.
Right.
But I don't want to watch it when it's not my team. What was fun there is that Alex Claudio came in and finally looked like good Claudio and picked the team up. Three innings, effective, quiet, no drama, nothing sexy, just put him away. And that was great. And the offense picked him up, Gallo doing Gallo things, and then Isaiah Kiner-Falefa doing Gallo things.
Yeah.
That's cool. I think he had zero home runs in his professional career coming into last year.
That's
his
correct.
First half dozen or so, and he's hit two in the bigs already this year. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, you heard it here first, y'all. Actually good.
Yeah, he's ever since I saw from like his second game where he did well, and just please be the next Michael Young.
Sorry.
So I said that I was irrationally angry, I think, earlier in this episode. I am just irrational in general.
Yeah.
Like, hey, yeah, go ahead and just be like a 2 to 3, maybe 4 win player for the next decade.
Yeah.
No, that's not that much. Just be good and hit and runs and play some good defense for the most of your career and just overall be an enjoyable bright spot. That's a win for sure. So it's really, talk about taking advantage of an opportunity.
Oh, yeah. He's got a basically right at league average batting line of the season as of right now in the game. 280, 325, 413, couple home runs. You know, he's striking out at an average clip, 23%, walking at about an average rate, 6%. You know, if you look at that batting line, I'm like, yeah, it's a pretty decent player. It's not a great player, but when you add in that defensive utility, that's a good and valuable and useful player. And is he going to stay a 100 or so WRC plus hitter? Probably not. I mean, but he might.
He might.
His hit tool, some evaluators really liked his swing. Some guys actually thought he could be a league average hitter with really limited power, which holds the whole profile back. And that's what we're seeing. A 413 slugging is not particularly great, but that's a good all-around profile. You know, that's a very useful player to have. A guy who can play every position on the field. He can catch. He can be a starting shortstop. He can play third, second. He can play the outfield. I'm sure he can fake it in center field. If Drew Robinson can, I believe in Isaiah Kiner-Falefa as well. So that was really encouraging to see in the one game we managed to pick up in the series. The first and third games were pretty troubling for different reasons. Cole Hamels was inefficient. He picked up 8 strikeouts, but he threw a lot of pitches to get where he needed to be in that game, which wasn't great. And then Claudio was not effective. And then the big one was Chris Martin, who we've talked about a bunch on this podcast. Big fan of Chris Martin. I think he's been really effective for us this season. We talked about Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, actually good. What is not actually good is not being able to hold on to a baseball. That's what he said. He had a forearm cramp that meant that he couldn't like open his hand.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I think Levi was reporting this afternoon. It would make it, in my head, really hard to be a baseball pitcher if I couldn't use my hand. That seems right. So, gave up those 4 runs. Weren't all on him, but that was not encouraging. Hopefully it's a minor thing. It was just some cramping, just some muscular thing, and that goes away. And we get back an effective Chris Martin later on. Because while Chris Martin is currently hurt and therefore ineffective, he's still probably a better pitcher than Matt Moore. Yes, the Texas Rangers hit 3 home runs off of Corey Kluber in a game, and it did not matter because Matt Moore gave up like 17 runs in the first 2 innings.
Mm-hmm. So we made it like 38 minutes into this before arriving at this point. I don't know if there's really anything to say, though. Anything more to say?
We've talked about Matt Moore at length, and I think the things that that we highlighted, what, probably 2 weeks ago now, are right. He's going to get wrecked. He wasn't effective. He wasn't able to stay in the zone. Hitters know that he can't throw strikes. He only gave up two walks. That's the most encouraging thing. He only got one strikeout. He only walked two dudes. He just gave up 11 hits.
That sounds bad. There.
Yeah. Three of them were home runs. I was saying when I was doing his stats and we were doing him and Perez next to each other that those home runs are going to start coming. He was getting very lucky and not allowing balls to go out of the park. Give up three of them in four innings yesterday. I think it really sucked to see that happen when the offense was actually getting some runs off of Kluber. He hit three home runs off Corey Kluber. He's one of the best starters in the game. If you can get three runs on a guy like that, you have to hope that your pitcher is going to keep you at least kind of in the game. And it was a foregone conclusion.
It wasn't even close. I think it was 9-0 after the second inning.
It was 9-1 after the second inning. 9-1. Excuse me.
My apologies. Man, but this is what I was saying. Yeah, this is what I was saying earlier, though, is it's one thing to be ineffective. It's one thing to be, you know, kind of not a good pitcher, not give your team a chance to win most nights or something. But it's another thing to not be able to even eat any semblance of innings. Because, shoot, Chris Martin's on the DL. Matt Bush has completely, like, I don't know, vaporized. Yeah. And Claudio is extremely concerning. The list goes on. Our bullpen is extremely overworked, and it's only the first week of May. Yeah. And Jeff Banister has a hard enough time like keeping his hands off of the bullpen phone as it is. The last thing you want to do is like force him to start using it in the fourth inning instead of the sixth inning.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, I was really pleased. It sucked, but Moore had given up 9 innings, and we sent him there for the third inning, and I had been kind of nominally keeping up with the game. And I said, good, you know, let him wear this one. Just eat it. If you have to give up 30 runs today, so be it. You just need to be able to pitch. And then he started getting the wheels coming off again in the third inning. I was like, okay, part of that, though, is you do actually have to get some outs. Like, it does have to happen. And then he managed to finish the third and fourth innings, which enormous props to Matt Moore for getting through four innings in that game. Woo.
Ugh.
And then, you know, we got Nick Gardewine a chance to work, which was very fun for me because supposedly he didn't show up to the ballpark until about half an hour before the game. He had to fly in from New Orleans early in the morning. And so he got to the ballpark at a quarter till noon, and that game time was
12:10. Yeah.
12:10. Yeah. So that was fun. It's like, hey guys, I'm Nick. Hello, Nick. You're in. Like,
right.
Right, you're pitching, like, literally right now. Get out there. Matt Moore started today, so we needed you. And then
Yeah, still won't beat the Darren O'Day story in Toronto a couple years back.
Oh, I must have missed this one. Which is the
okay,
story?
Well, I don't want to butcher it because I'd have to reconnect with the details. It's a great baseball travel story. Basically, we acquired Darren O'Day, and, like, the day of a game, and it was like a 7 or something o'clock, you know, regular evening game in Toronto. And he had all day, I guess, to travel across the country to his new team. Got through, of course, you know, it's another country. There's customs and stuff. Long story short is he had to wear a Case and Gabbard's jersey on the mound because he didn't have a jersey made for him yet. They were like, this one's blue. You can put this or gray or whatever. You can put this one on. It doesn't have your name or number on it, but it's got our team name on the front. And he literally, like, I think that he took a taxi or something to the stadium, like, walked into the stadium, went into the bullpen, warmed up, and then met his manager and teammates on the mound. Like, hey,
that's excellent.
My name's Darren. I throw a sidearm. Good to meet you, Wash.
That would be the one you're like, wait, you're a sidearm? Oh, no.
Honestly, the catcher then probably was asking him, what kind of pitches do you throw? That's probably a very real conversation.
Like, I need to know. Anyways. This is important information. And I'm sure that taxi conversation was fun, which reminds me of that there's a great Joey Votto quote from today or yesterday.
Yeah, I saw that.
He's talking about talking to his Uber drivers around St. Louis, reminding them that he won the MVP award over Pujols, which
Votto's,
Joey Votto owns.
Yeah, Joey Votto owns. That's a hot take.
Joey Votto, a sneaky candidate for actually good. You're going to hear it here first, guys. Joey Votto, pretty decent at baseball, but he doesn't get RBI. You know, he just doesn't knock in runs. Too many walks. So gross. What a terrible ball player. Walks are bad. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, it's odd to me that he is so vocal about wanting to stay in Cincinnati of all places. Like, the team isn't good, and the city isn't good. I just don't – I don't know what the appeal is. I guess he's probably – maybe his kids are in a really good school or something. Yeah.
That's something he really enjoys doing. Yeah. So it feels a little silly to preview a series that will already be a game in by the time anybody listens to this podcast, but we do have the Boston Red Sox. David Price started game one and was great. I think he went 9 shutout innings.
Got lit up.
Oh, the other thing happened. That's fun.
I don't enjoy David Price, and it just makes me feel good every time we play him because I know that we're just going to knock him out before the 5th inning, and he's going to just have that look on his face like, oh, man, but I'm really good.
But I went to Vanderbilt.
Yeah. So that always just fills me. It takes me all the way back to 2010.
Mm-hmm. And we turned Mike Minor today, so battle of the interesting lefties from a narrative perspective. The incredibly expensive one-time super ace and Mike Minor. last I saw, he went through 6. I don't know if he went out for the 7th inning. So hopefully an encouraging start. Gave him a couple runs early. Was really laboring. This is an excellent lineup, though. I don't think the Red Sox need any introduction. Mookie Betts is batting like 4,000 somehow. Every hit he has is actually worth more than a home run. He gets like leftovers that he can just exchange at the plate. They're like, instead of a strikeout this at bat, I'm going to take a single. And they're like, sure, have it.
Honestly, it's so ridiculous.
He's crazy. He's just nuts.
Like, that's honestly very barely hyperbole.
He's really good. He's really good.
He's so freaking good. His WRC plus right now are coming into the game today, and he has a double at least today. 232.
He had like a 230, yeah.
So he's 130% better than the league average hitter.
That's good, right? That's good.
Yeah. And his BABIP is only 329, so he's not getting lucky. He's not. There's
he's
not
quick,
like a,
too, so he's just scorching everything.
He's walking. He has the same defense.
He might be the best
plays great defense
in the game outside of Jason Hayward.
He's 25. He's walking and striking the exact same amount this season. It's kind of cool. Mookie's good for
pretty
baseball.
Good. Pretty good. Who else is pretty good though? Bartolo Colon and Rick Porcello. That's going to be a fun matchup. Rick Porcello finally became a good pitcher, and that's fun. Bartolo Colon has always and forever been a good pitcher, and everyone on this podcast knew it from the very beginning and loved him. There was never any dissension on this podcast.
Never.
Nope. Then we'll get to see Cole again, Eduardo Rodriguez, another lefty-lefty matchup. I'm not really super looking forward to Cole Hamels going up against the Boston offense and especially Mr. Betts, but we'll see. Maybe we get a really good – maybe the Red Sox and strike something. And Cole and that competitive fire gets relit. And then the Sunday game to wrap it up. Doug Fister, old reliable in theory for us, going against Chris Sale. So, sorry, Doug. Do what you can. Do what you
Here's
can.
Here's a call. Gallo's going to hit a home run off of Chris Sale.
Someone has to. Adam Rosales is not on this team anymore. So, somebody else has to do that. I kind of like it, actually. Joey has been encouraging in some ways against lefties this year. Mm-hmm. He's going the other way, which I know there was some talk about that early in the season that he wasn't hitting the ball hard enough to justify it. It's working. Joey doesn't really pull the ball unless he's hitting dingers, and that's kind of crazy. He probably should pull it more, but he's going to stop seeing that super shift against him if he keeps hitting the way he's been hitting this year. That's going to be something to pay attention to going forward, I think.
Yeah, it's a trend, but of course, it's just a 1 month sample size, so it'll be really cool to see how he can develop and mature as a hitter. Because I don't know. I get the sense that he's not satisfied with being a, you know, a 210 batting average and 40 home runs, that he wants to be a more complete hitter. And I don't know. I have never talked to him, obviously, and and he hasn't been in the game long enough to be extremely well known as far as like personal thoughts and things. But to me, I just get a vibe that he resents, or at least I resent it for him, is the comparisons to Adam Dunn.
I think so.
Just a straight masher, three true outcome king.
Mm-hmm. And, his defense, his base running are such a big part of his game, really.
Yeah.
And I think he's a much better hitter than a lot of people mm-hmm. gave him credit for coming up, and he's been willing to make a lot of those adjustments.
Right. So I think that the going the other way and developing as a hitter is a conscious thing, and mm-hmm. I'm going to bet that if the results aren't there through the first month of the season, he's still going to have a good plan and going to execute and still develop and not just be... He batted, I think, like 190-something last year. He's going to improve on that. And I've maintained that if he bats like 240 in a season, he'll have a good shot at winning an MVP award. So
he's going to get votes.
Yeah.
With that power, he's going to get votes.
Right. So looking forward to that. And yeah, it's kind of, you know, the game within the game is a casual fan... You know, no offense, but can just look up at the stat line and say, okay, I understand Gallo, and there he is, and he is what his numbers say that they are. But, you know, it's very clear that he's evolving, and that's exciting when he's basically the face of your future franchise, or the future mm-hmm. face of your franchise.
Our large adult son growing up before our very eyes.
So true.
Our big, beautiful boy, Joey Gallo. But Joey is going to carry these 2018 Rangers into the promised land, and I think we are going to carry ourselves into the end of this podcast. We got some stuff to look forward to. Hopefully when we are talking next time, we are recapping a delightful series sweep over the Boston Red Sox with several dozen home runs from all of the most important members of the 2018 Texas Rangers, who currently have four functional limbs. Which is a smaller number than you'd really like it to be on the 3rd of May, but such is life, such is baseball, such is being a Rangers fan.
Yeah.
So, as always, you can go ahead and find us on Twitter, at Rangers Rundown. All of our individual handles are discoverable there. We also have a bright and shiny new Facebook page, if that's more your speed. It's also called Rangers Rundown. Hey, do you have any tips for finding that?
You go to facebook.com, and then there's a search bar, and then you type in Rangers Rundown, and then there's a picture there that's the exact same picture that is on your computer screen or on your phone, the logo, and you just click on that, and then you click the thumbs up, and then you share it with your grandparents that are on Facebook.
Man, what will they think of next? can you, once we get off this pod, you have to tell me that one more time. I'm going to write it down, and then I'm going to go ahead and try and do it myself.
It's ambitious, but I'll walk you through it.
Yeah, I think with your help, I will manage to find a way. But hopefully next time, everyone, I will have discovered how Facebook works, and we'll be talking to you through some other element of the vast interconnected internets. Until such time, though, take care, and go Rangers.
Bye, guys.
Toodles!